Hare Krishna. So we'll continue reading from the introduction of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita that was compiled or used, transcribed from series of five lectures that Srila Prabhupada gave back in 1966, I think. So let's see where we were before last time. Introduction. Introduction. So we are reading actually the internal reasons of appearance of Lord Chaitanya. So I'll just go back and read one paragraph from last time and then we'll continue reading after that. But before that we'll offer our respects. Soma Magyana Tamirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupaha Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guroho Shri Yuta Padkamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Sucha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitam Sucha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchan Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyaye Vacha Patita Nam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnave Bhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Okay, Hare Hare. So the first few verses of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is giving, offering his obeisances to Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, Advaita Acharya, like that, and also explaining in brief about their who they are, about their identity in brief. So that's what Prabhupada is explaining here, the first few verses. So in the next verse, the author further explains why Krishna assumed the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Krishna desired to know the glory of Radha's love. Why is she so much in love with me? Krishna asked. What is my special qualification that attracts her so? And what is the actual way in which she loves me? It seems strange that Krishna, as the Supreme, should be attracted by anyone's love. A man searches after the love of a woman because he is imperfect. He lacks something. The love of a woman, that potency and pleasure, is absent in man. And therefore, a man wants a woman. But this is not the case with Krishna, who is full in himself. Thus Krishna expressed surprise, why am I attracted by Radharani? And when Radharani feels my love, what is she actually feeling? To taste the essence of that loving exchange, Krishna made his appearance in the same way that the moon appears on the horizon of the sea. Just as the moon was produced by the churning of the sea, by the churning of spiritual loving affairs, the moon of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. Indeed, Lord Chaitanya's complexion was golden, just like the luster of the moon. Although this is figurative language, it conveys the meaning behind the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The full significance of his appearance will be explained in later chapters. After offering respects to Lord Chaitanya, Krishnadas Kaviraj begins offering them to Lord Nityananda in the 7th verse of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. The author explains that Lord Nityananda is Balaram, who is the origin of Mahavishnu. Krishna's first expansion is Balaram, a portion of whom is manifested as Sankarshan, who then expands as Pradyumna. In this way, so many expansions take place. Although there are many expansions, Lord Sri Krishna is the origin, as confirmed in the Brahma Samhita. He is like the original candle, from which many thousands and millions of candles are lit. Although any number of candles can be lit, the original candle still retains its identity as the origin. In this way, Krishna expands himself into many forms, and all these expansions are called Vishnu Tattva. Vishnu is a large light and we are small lights, but all are expansions of Krishna. So anybody who wants to read this, you know, to gain a clear understanding of this, I think it is explained in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, chapter 8 or something, around chapter 8, 10 or something, maybe somewhere in between 10 to 15 chapters. Prabhupada explains that right at the beginning of the chapter, how Lord Krishna expands into Lord Balaram expands, another expansion comes as Sankarshan, and then from Sankarshan comes the Chaturvyu, you know, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, Vasudev, and one more, Sankarshan only, again another Sankarshan, and then from that Sankarshan comes Narayan, like that, and then comes Mahavishnu sequence. So like in the category of avatars, like there are different ways of dividing that all the different incarnations of Lord into different classifications. So one way is, in one definition they are like Amsha avatar, Kala avatar, Guna avatar, Leela avatar, Yuga avatar, like that, you know. Then there is Shakti Avesh Avatar, like that. There are many different categories are there. So Amsha Avatar basically means that one part, Amsh, basically. Once Amsha Avatar, Krishna expands into Vishnu, Mahavishnu, he expands into one incarnation. And then that incarnation again expands into another incarnation. So that is what is called as Amsha Amsha, like Amsha of Amsha, but technically also called as Kala Avatar, like that. So if you look at it from that angle, then from starting from Lord Krishna, there are many, at least 5 or 6, 7 layers in between before Mahavishnu or incarnations come into our material world, like that. So Amsha 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 Avatar, like that. Kya hua? आवाज नहीं आ रही क्या? मैंने दूर किया था, because I felt there is some echo. No, there is no. Lord Balaram, who is the origin of Mahavishnu, Krishna's first expansion is. Oh, sir, I read already this. When it is necessary to create the material universes, Vishnu expands himself as Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu lies down in the causal ocean and breathes all the universes from his nostrils. Thus, from Mahavishnu and the causal ocean spring all the universes, and all these universes, including ours, float in the causal ocean. So these universes, this is Vishnu form, the first Vishnu form, Mahapurush or Mahavishnu, is technically known as Karanodakshayi Vishnu. So causal ocean, the word cause is coming from the Karan, Samudra, like that. In this regard, there is a story of Vaman, who, when he took 3 steps, stuck his foot through the covering of this universe. Water from the causal ocean flowed through the hole that his foot made, and it is said that that water became the river Ganges. Therefore, the Ganges is accepted as the most sacred water of Vishnu and is worshipped by all Hindus from the Himalayas down to the Bay of Bengal. Mahavishnu is actually an expansion of Balaram, who is Krishna's first expansion, and in the Vrindavan pastimes, his brother. In the Mahamantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The word Rama refers to Balaram. Since Lord Nityananda is Balaram, Rama also refers to Lord Nityananda. Thus, Hare Krishna, Hare Rama addresses not only Krishna and Balaram, but Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda as well. The subject matter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita primarily deals with what is beyond this material creation. The cosmic material expansion is called Maya, illusion, because it has no eternal existence. Because it is sometimes manifested and sometimes not, it is regarded as illusory. But beyond this temporary manifestation is a higher nature, as indicated in Bhagavad Gita 8.20. Parastasmat tu bhavanyo vyakto vyaktat sanatanah yahasa sarveshu bhuteshu nashyat suna vinashyati. So one clarification, basically many times, you know, people say or talk about who have some understanding of this Vedic knowledge, they say that this word is all is Maya, it is illusion. It's not real. They say like that. But that is not correct. That is not the proper Siddhanta. It's not the proper understanding. So we say this word is real actually, but it is real, but because it is temporary, it will not exist for all time. It comes into creation, and then for as long as it is created, for that same amount of time, it goes out of creation. There is no existence, basically. And then during the time it is in creation, in that duration also, there are cycles of different yugas, they keep on rolling, and in between there are pralayas that are happening. And even in the beginning, it takes quite a bit of time for Lord Brahma to start creation, to figure out, do his tapasya and have first round of creation, which does not go through well, you know, then he has to start again from scratch like that. So, if you look at eternity of time, the actual manifestation where life is existing in the material universe is actually probably will be 30-40% of the time, not really even 50%. So that from that angle it is said it is illusion, that it is not really there. It is there sometimes and not sometimes. So then you can't really call it real. That is where it's illusion. So this Bhagavad Gita verse 8.20, yet there is another unmanifested nature which is eternal and is transcendental to this manifested and unmanifested matter. It is supreme and is never annihilated. When all in this world is annihilated, that part remains as it is. So another reason that this world is called illusory is because not just this whole universe gets created and then it is finished for a long time, but also there is no continuity, you know, there is no continuity of life in this universe, in the material creation. Every living being is, you know, born for a short amount of time and then dies again, and again born and again dies, born again and dies. So there is no continuity, basically. So our lifespan is like what, 50, 60, 70 years, 80 years. Out of this universe is going to exist according to the Srimad Bhagavatam and Vedic scriptures. The universe exists for 311 trillion years. And out of that we are going to live 70 or 80 years, 60 years. If we are lucky, 40, 50 years only. Like that. So, and we are so much worried about, oh, what is, I have to do so many things, take care of, you know, my children, my parents, and bank balance, and gold, and land, and houses. And if you look at 311 trillion years, you know, where is 70, 80 years? You can't even blink your eye in that time. It will go so fast compared to the 311 trillion years. So that is the problem, you know, that we are all in this, stuck in this mean, so much time and energy we spend, pretty much 100% of, 99 to 100% of time and energy is spent on this lifetime. When this lifetime is pretty much already decided at a high level, you know, how much happiness we are going to get, how much suffering we are going to get, is already pre-decided. But still all our effort goes in that, basically, which is all waste. That's why Srimad Bhagavatam and Vedic scriptures keeps on saying that don't waste time in trying to improve your material condition, because it's all, you cannot earn more than what is destined for you, you cannot earn less also. Like that. The material world has a manifested state, vyakta, and a potential unmanifested state, avyakta. The supreme nature is beyond both the manifested and the unmanifested material nature. This superior nature can be understood as the living force, which is present in the bodies of all living creatures. The body itself is composed of inferior nature, matter, but it is the superior nature that is moving the body. The symptom of that superior nature is consciousness. Thus, in the spiritual world, where everything is composed of the superior nature, everything is conscious. In the material world, there are inanimate objects that are not conscious. But in the spiritual world, nothing is inanimate. There, a table is conscious, the land is conscious, the trees are conscious, everything is conscious. And this is a very difficult thing to understand. I mean, of course, soul, atma, spirit means person. So like, again, for people who are not practicing Krishna consciousness seriously, this subject matter is beyond their ability to understand, because these things are not really understood by mind and intelligence. These are revealed. These are called realizations, you know. When we become eligible to understand these things, you know, then when we are Krishna, at some point of time when Krishna is, thinks that you are ready to understand, he will give the realizations or revelations from the heart, basically. So one example, you know, is quite interesting to think that you, so like, if everything is a person, you're sitting on a chair in the spiritual world, you're sitting on a chair and the chair is a person, that doesn't seem to be very respectful. You're sitting on a person. Table is a person, spoon is a person, everything is, food is also a person. So recently I came across one example that Prabhupada gave, because it's these things, this is actually very difficult, it's mind-boggling, you know, how it is possible. So Prabhupada gives the example, like, he says that Radharani is cooking for Krishna, you know, so there are multiple fires, you know, so the multiple items are put, so rice is there, dal is there, sabjis are there, she is cooking many things at the same time, you know, so now she wants to check whether the rice is done or not. So what we do here, we open the pot, we take out one piece of rice and press it and see whether it is done or not. Radharani doesn't do that, doesn't have to do that. So she says, "Rice, are you done?" And rice replies, "No, give me a couple more minutes." Like that. Yeah, this is exactly Srila Prabhupada's words, you know, he explained like that. Everything is conscious. Yes, that is true, but then again, there is, that is true, but still the basic, primarily, there is, for every spirit soul, there is one, his original constitutional position is there. So normally a spirit soul is best satisfied, you know, he is most happy in rendering a particular kind of service. To either directly to Krishna or to Krishna's servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. You know, like that. So that is his particular rasa, basically, in the spiritual world. So that is the stable state, but at the same time, movement is allowed. It's not that, you know, a person is a chair, you know, so he's all, forever. If he wants to change his rasa, he can change, you know. But from what I have heard, you know, again, this is something I have not heard from, directly read from the scriptures, but I have heard from some, read in some places, that not from table chair perspective, but from the rasa perspective, like, you know, dasya ras, sakharas, you know, servitorship, friendship, relationship, parental relationship, conjugal relationship. So suppose there is a servant, you know, or a friend in the spiritual world, he wants to change his, you know, move to a different mood, different rasa. What I have heard or read somewhere, that in that situation, they have to come here. They have to come to the material world, practice again, and then go back again. Like that. That's what I have heard. See, again, there is no black and white, you know. I mean, these things are beyond my understanding. It's not that I know what I have read and heard a little bit. I am telling, sharing with you. So take it for what it is worth, you know. It's not a black and white answer. That's what I heard, you know, that suppose somebody is a cow in the spiritual world. Now he wants to be a friend of Krishna. He wants to play as a cowherd boy now instead of being a cow. So you come back in the spiritual world, from the spiritual world to the material world, you know, do devotional service for one or few lifetimes, basically, to service, and then cultivate that new rasa, you know, and then go back.
Is it not considered a fall down if you are coming to material world?
No, it's not. No, it's not. It's just service, you know. You're coming as a pure devotee, not coming as a conditioned soul. So, like in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, even in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, Ajamil story, where the discussion is happening between Ajamil and the Yamdutas and Vishnudutas, even there it is mentioned that Vishnudutas, they are actually, all the time, they are present, they are traveling in the material world. They are there. Why they are there? To protect the devotees of the Lord from, you know, so many different kind of situations, even to protect them, even from accident, things like the accidental things, they are, that's why they are, so many of them are there like that. So they are here in the material world, it's not a fall down for them. Of course, they are not visible, they are not in the normal process here, but you know, devotees who are coming, you know, it is as part of their service. Basically, they want to change or increase their service, you know, and coming to the material world, you know, it's good for us. We get their association, you know, for whatever few lifetimes they are here, pure devotees, you know, like that. That's my understanding, you know, again, no hard and fast thing like that. It is not possible to imagine how far this material manifestation extends. In the material world, everything is calculated by imagination or by some imperfect method. But the Vedic literatures give real information of what lies beyond the material universe. Giri is here. Chikits are here. I think Ketan can start. We'll finish this paragraph and then stop. Since it is not possible to obtain information of anything beyond this material nature by experimental means, those who believe only in experimental knowledge may doubt the Vedic conclusions. For such people cannot even calculate how far this universe extends, nor can they reach far into the universe itself. That which is beyond our power of conception is called achintya. It is useless to argue or speculate about the inconceivable. So there is this verse in our scriptures, Prabhupada quotes it often. Achintya khalu ye bhava na tamsa tarke na yo jayet. You know, that what is achintya, what is not perceptible to perceivable by us, by our senses. Na tamsa tarke na, tarke na means arguments. You know, there is no point in, you know, arguing about those things, because you can neither prove this way nor that way. So it's all, that's why these things have to be revealed, revelations they are called. If something is truly inconceivable, it is not subject to speculation or experimentation. Our energy is limited and our sense perception is limited. Therefore, we must rely on the Vedic conclusions regarding that subject matter which is inconceivable. Knowledge of the superior nature must simply be accepted without argument. How is it possible to argue about something to which we have no access? The method for understanding the transcendental subject matter is given by the Lord Krishna himself in the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna tells Arjuna at the beginning of the 4th chapter, Imam vivasvate yogam proktavan aham avyayam vivasvan manave praha manorikshva kave bravit. I instructed this imperishable science of yoga to the sun god Vivasvan, and Vivasvan instructed it to Manu, the father of mankind, and Manu in turn instructed it to Ikshvaku. This is the method of the parampara or disciplic succession. Similarly, Srimad Bhagavatam explains that Krishna imparted knowledge unto the heart of Brahma. It's in the first verse. Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kavaye. That thing. Oyante Yat Suryaha. The first created being within the universe, Brahma imparted those lessons to his disciple Narada, and Narada imparted that knowledge to his disciple Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva imparted it to Madhvacharya, and from Madhvacharya the knowledge came down to Madhvendrapuri, and then to Ishwarpuri, and from him to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai. Hari Hari Bol, Vancha Kalpataru Bhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyascha Patitanam Pavane.